Second Edition from NPR News.
Well, here we are once again for the local edition news and information to keep you connected in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole. Coming up in the second half of the program, we celebrate, we honor, we acknowledge EMS Week is this week, Emergency Medical Services. There was a special exhibit that's still going on over at the Sullivan County Museum honoring the history of local EMS workers. We talk to EMS workers, past and present. That's coming up in the second half of the program. But first, every month, we're checking in with The River, an independent news outlet seeking to provide regional lens on topics in our listening area. This week, we're talking about a new green firehouse in New Paltz. It's keeping in line with New York State's climate goals. It's an all-electric solar-powered firehouse. And on the phone to tell us more is The River's climate reporter, Lissa Harris. Thank you so much for joining us again, Lissa.
Thank you so much. And this seems to be a first responder heavy program tonight. I love it.
Yeah. I actually forgot that because I was working so much on editing the part that's coming up in the second half of the show. I forgot that there's this connection running through it. It is EMS week. And, you know, and I guess we'll just pause because this is going to come up later in the second part of the show. But, you know, these organizations, volunteer fire departments, ambulance corps, things like that, they are in great need of volunteers. And I heard that many times this past weekend. So I'll just say that.
I fully endorse that. I'm actually a fairly new volunteer firefighter myself here in Margaretville, where I live in Delaware County. And I just recently passed interior firefighting class. So I got my Firefighter 1 certification. It's been really rewarding so far. I highly recommend people take this up in their communities if they can. And the fire service, I was nervous about it. They've been so welcoming to me. And, it's something that you can do for your community. And frankly, as a climate reporter, I'm very in touch with this. The local fire department and EMS also, first response, is kind of the front lines of climate change around here. They're the folks that are responding to climate disasters, which around here tend to take the form of floods. So, you'd be taking climate action as well, volunteering for your local fire department.
Yeah, and the floods and there's increased risk of fires and natural brush fires that aren't that natural anymore. So that was another connection I wasn't even expecting, so thank you. So you wrote an article about this new green firehouse. Is this the only type of firehouse like this in the state?
I'm not entirely positive if it's the only one, but it is certainly breaking a lot of new ground. Part of the reason for that is that New York State's building codes are not really designed for an era in which we're going to be moving away from heating our houses with fossil fuels. We have the technology to heat houses with electricity in a much more efficient way than burning things inside of our houses to keep warm. And there are other places in the world where that transition has taken off a lot faster. And New York State is kind of in this place where it's being debated at the state legislature level, at the policy level, and there's effort to kind of start moving in that direction and to start requiring new buildings to be free of fossil fuels, but we're not there yet. And so local planners who really wanted to see this firehouse be a green building, not be burning fossil fuels to heat it, and to be energy efficient, had a real uphill battle in terms of convincing the state, which was funding a lot of the project of the new firehouse, to basically, you know, let them realize their vision for a green building.
Wait, hold on. That's you're saying that this new green firehouse that is in line with New York State's climate goals had to essentially struggle with the state to even exist?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Oh,
it
God.
Sounds totally counterintuitive because New York State has had a law on the books for a few years now that basically sets pretty ambitious climate targets. And as part of that law, there's a plan being drafted that, you know, that basically says it's really important for buildings to start moving off of fossil fuels. So the state is very aware of this, and there are real targets here. But what hasn't happened yet is any kind of legislation to bring state building codes in line with those goals. And so you still have, you know, this spectacle of state officials overseeing this process and telling the New Paltz village and town and fire department people who wanted to see a green building get built, you're crazy to do this.
Wow.
You know, but they won out in the end. Built a new firehouse, 16,000 square feet, heated by air source heat pumps, which are, you know, the kind that can handle cold weather and sub-zero temperatures. And they're basically extracting heat right out of the air and pumping it into the building instead of generating new heat. So it's an incredibly efficient building. And eventually it's going to be solar powered with a bunch of solar panels on the roof.
Okay, so it's not solar powered yet, but they're still
working on that part. It's not solar powered yet. It's actually, as of last week, it didn't have a certificate of occupancy yet, although I understand that was coming very soon. They were very much nearing the finish line. But the design of it was something that the fire chief went back and forth with the design team about, because initially the designers wanted to put the solar panels on the ground. And he said, no, we need that space. We need it for training firefighters. We need it to land helicopters. We've got to put them on the roof because I need the space around the fire building. So, you know, there were some concessions made in the process to make sure that the fire department has what it needs. And they also still have a fossil fuel backup system in the form of a gas generator that will keep the lights on when there's a power outage. But, you know, overall, this is a building that's going to be heated with electricity. It's going to use a third the amount of energy that a standard building would use. And it's going to solve a lot of problems for the fire department, which has been in need of a new building for about more than 30 years now.
Well, that was my next question, because we're talking about the environmental angle of this. We're talking about the logistics of getting it done and the state requirements, state struggle, all this stuff. But in the end, have you talked to any of the members of that fire department? Do you have a feeling for how they're feeling about this new building?
I talked to the chief at some length, and he is ecstatic about the new building. His dad was the chief of the department before him, and he grew up in the fire service. He's been with the department for 21 years, and he says all of their volunteers, and it is an all-volunteer fire department, are just so delighted to finally have this new building that they have literally been planning for and hoping for and trying to realize for more than 30 years. And, you know, I think there's some irony here in that it kind of took a climate disaster to make that building happen, because the bulk of the funding for the building is coming from the Governor's Office of Storm Recovery through the New York Rising program, which, you know, as a local resident, you may know, this is the program that was created in the wake of the Irene floods. Right. To try to address local flood resilience issues. And you know, that has a lot to do with adapting to climate change and with, you know, making sure that our local infrastructure is, you know, is robust to withstand the increased pace of natural disasters like Hurricane Irene and like the floods that we get around here that are so catastrophic.
Well, along those lines, I'm wondering if in your reporting on climate in the area, do you have your eye on any other upcoming industrial-sized green projects in the Hudson Valley or Catskills?
I would love to hear about more of them, honestly. I'm working more on a story about pushback from some counties to the draft scoping plan, which is the plan that the state is working on to address climate and some of the rural worries about energy insecurity and what you know, what climate action means for New York's most rural areas. So I'm kind of digging into that. I would be super interested to, you know, to tackle more building stories. I know Brett Alone over in Ulster County just recently completed a really huge new project to rebuild their bakery as a zero carbon facility. And, you know, I do hear about kind of more private efforts in that realm sometimes, but I think this firehouse project is really notable for being a public project. You know, this is a local government involved project, and in a way that's a lot harder because you can't just make, you know, whatever decisions you want to make. You've got to really be accountable to budgets and to voters and to the way that you're spending public money. And so, you know, for them to pull off a building with this level of green ambition is really, I think, remarkable.
It's, you know, I'm hoping we'll hear about more things that are coming, especially because we live in a state that has expressed such a, you know, actual goals of achieving some environmental progress. And, you know, it'd be good to hear some more, you know, public buildings that are actually doing that. But what's the hurry? It's not like the world's burning or anything. my gosh.
It's intense being in this space and keeping an eye on what the climate scientists are saying, which is increasingly, you know, we've just got to stop burning things. it's a sobering message.
When you put it that way.
And yeah, it's coming up pretty hard against politics, against you know, the physical infrastructure of how we make energy and how we heat our homes and all sorts of decisions that we make. And New York is in a really interesting place with it because we're really at a point in time where, you know, the state has these really ambitious goals, but they haven't yet quite translated into, okay, so what does that look like? And what laws do we need to pass to make sure that the goals actually get met and they're just not goals on paper? And what kinds of decisions are governments at all levels going to have to make in order to carry out these decisions? And I think really importantly, like, how do we make sure in all of this that regular people, you know, not only are not hurt by it, but actually benefit from the ways that we, you know, we basically have a chance to rebuild some of our important systems. And, you know, we can either kind of get it right on the community level and on the fairness and equity level, or we can screw it up.
Listen, we've got just 1 minute left. I want to spend that minute talking about the climate action that's happening next Tuesday, May 24th at 5 p.m. What can you tell us about this?
I am really hoping that people will join us. We are having an online virtual panel on how you can weigh in on the state's climate planning process because they're still accepting public comments on it.
I apologize. Is the name of it Your Role in New York's Climate Action? That's the name of
it,
right?
Yes, Your Role in New York's Climate Action. That means you, listeners.
I didn't say it because I thought it was written as a question to you, so I didn't say that part. But now I realize that's part of the name. All right, sorry. Anyway, it's happening next Tuesday at 5?
It's happening next Tuesday at 5. It's online, so you can tune in from wherever you are. If you go to therivernewsroom.com/events, you will see a link to register for the event and to get tickets. And I hope that people will show up and learn about the climate plan. We have some amazing panelists who have been involved with this at various levels and with climate action and with community work on that. And so I hope people will tune in.
All right. Well, Lissa Harris with The River, therivernewsroom.com. You can find out info at therivernewsroom.com/events. Lissa, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you for having me on.
This is Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills, Northeast Pennsylvania. We'll be right back.
WJFF Jeffersonville, Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.
Okay, welcome back to to the Local Edition News and Information, keeping you connected in the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. And this weekend in the Sullivan County Catskills, I went out to Hurleyville. I went to the Sullivan County Museum for the special EMS history exhibit that is there because this is EMS week, emergency medical services. Also, the organizer of the event, Myron Gattell, wanted this look back at Sullivan County history to be an opportunity for EMS workers, current and past, to get together, have a bit of a reunion, and that's just what happened. So we're going to go to that exhibit now, and we'll start with Myron's reaction to how the day was going.
Very good, and some people that haven't seen each other in 10, 20 years, getting together, talking about old times and new times, and what happened to who and when and where. Yes, always would have liked more people, and just so you know, they still have the opportunity. This exhibit's going to be in place till Saturday, so still the opportunity. If people have mementos, memorabilia of squads, photos, uniforms, please let us know, to either borrow or donation. But I thank them all for coming. It was great.
Now, I'm going to talk to some folks. I'm going to ask them about their experience in EMS. And I've talked to you about the exhibit, so now I want to talk to you about your experience. Like, what's your story? How'd you get started?
What's my story? Well, you don't have long enough for that, Jason. But what's my story with EMS? Well, in around late 60s, Garlick Ambulance Service, Garlick Funeral Home was getting out of the ambulance service for many reasons, including changing standards, and the balls kind of were taking over throughout New York State and other places in the country. Charlie Crist, longtime reporter for the local papers, the Record and the Watchman, spearheaded volunteers to become the Monticello Volunteer Ambulance Corps. I think they formed in 1970. And I saw the ads, not the ads, the articles in the paper, and I said, wow, it's volunteerism, it's medically oriented, and I had the first aid merit badge. I was a Boy Scout, so that's a good start, and I took the courses and then joined up. I think I took first aid, then I took EMT. It was 72 or 73, and in those days it took a while to get on the Corps, and then about a year later I got on Monticello Ambulance Corps.
Okay, let's get out there and talk to some of the EMS folks.
I'm Donna Denman, and I am a member of Grahamsville First Aid Squad. I'm not a riding member any longer. I'm a life member, but I was a riding and participating member for over 50 years. I was president for a number of years. I think probably I was vice president for a while, and then I was captain for at least 10 years, probably longer. I cannot remember the year when I joined. We had only a few people in it at the time, but at that time, we didn't have a building. We met in the firehouse in Grahamsville. And then eventually, we were able to get our own building.
Do you remember why you joined? What was going on in your life when you decided to start doing this? Was this something that people in your family were already doing? Or what got you into this?
I was just looking for something to do to help people, I think, and be of service to, you know, the community. And I wasn't much for bake sales, so I got involved with this. And I took the second EMT class that was ever given in Sullivan County.
Wow.
But that was quite a long time ago, so I don't remember a whole lot about it.
Is there any, having done this for so long and you know, like a half century worth of experience, does anything stand out? Any particularly memorable moments that really stand out to you when you look back on it?
We had one call where we got called out for what we thought was really quite a serious call, and it was snowing, and the snow had not been plowed. It was coming right up over the fenders and stuff of our ambulance. It turned out that patient was not too seriously ill. However, at that time, another call came out, and this patient was seriously ill. I called the town and got them to go plow the roads out for this. And as I recall, my husband got off of our rig and jumped onto the other one to make the crew for that rig.
So making calls in some serious winter weather.
Well, you know, we have a lot of that in Sullivan County.
Yeah. Wow. It's EMS week, and this has been such a part of your life for so long that people are reflecting on EMS week. What do you want them to keep in mind this week? What do you want them to be aware of?
The volunteers that they give of their time. They do not get paid anything. And as a matter of fact, you couldn't pay me to do that stuff. Right? I mean, you know, because you get called out in the middle of the night. And so I would just like them to bear in mind the volunteers are giving, they are volunteers, and they are giving of their time, you know, freely. The only compensation they get for it is knowing that they helped someone.
Well, I thank you for all your years of service, and I thank you for talking to us today.
Well, you're certainly welcome.
My name is Alex Rao. I'm the EMS coordinator for Sullivan County. I'm also the director of the 911 Center. And I, you know, it's great to have this exhibit here at the Sullivan County Museum. There's a lot of, you know, great memories of EMS past back from the 50s and 60s. And a lot of great people and a lot of great memories to share and kind of see the history of EMS, where we were, and hopefully, you know, moving forward, where we're going. You know, it's always good to kind of learn, you know, learn some of the roots and see some of the memories.
Could you talk briefly about how you got to this point where you're doing this, or you're doing this level of coordination? Like, how did you get started in this?
So, ironically, and here I stand holding pictures from the Town of Liberty Ambulance Corps. I began my EMS career when I was 16. I joined the Liberty Ambulance Corps, and you know, I wanted to give back to my community. I really wanted to help out. I enjoyed helping people, and here I am, you know, 30 years later, now a volunteer in the Livingston Manor Ambulance Corps, president. I'm also the county's EMS coordinator, and you know, just trying to coordinate and get all of our EMS squads on the same page. Talk about current events, current issues facing EMS. Obviously, recruitment, retention is very challenging. Again, unfortunately, I sit here in a room with folks that never had those problems. You know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of camaraderie. There was a lot of, you know, people that were always stepping up to help their community. Today, with, you know, people working multiple jobs, increased responsibilities, and just a lot of transient people living in the area, it becomes a little bit more challenging to find folks that want to volunteer. So we're always looking.
If somebody's listening to this right now, and they may well be that they were not aware of either the need or the opportunity in this, if we're starting to catch their ear with this, what can they do to find out more information about how to volunteer?
They can contact either their local township, their town ambulance corps, or they can contact me at the county, Bureau of EMS, at 845-807-0508. Go to the Bureau of EMS, and we'll put them in touch with their local ambulance corps.
Say that number one more time.
845-807-0508.
It's EMS week, all week, and this is, you know, we're raising awareness of the need and the service that's done. But is there anything in particular that you want just the average folks in the community to know?
You know, it takes a special person to be a volunteer. There is a commitment. There is a dedication. And it really is neighbors helping neighbors. And, you know, and that goes a long way to, you know, they say it takes a village. And we certainly like to be a part of that village. EMS Week is a great opportunity to celebrate and recognize our EMS providers. The last 2 years with the COVID pandemic have been hell on EMS from a mental perspective. From a physical perspective, having to wear PPE all the time, and always being afraid of bringing the virus home to your family, you know, especially early on when it was a, you know, much more devastating illness. So our EMS providers never backed down. Any person in the public that needed an ambulance got one. You know, much more precautions were taken, but it was very much mentally taxing on our EMS professionals. And I think, you know, now more than ever, we should really pay tribute to them, thank them. If you see a volunteer EMS member, you know, be sure to say thank you. And, you know, you yourself, if you're willing to and able to step up, you know, we need drivers, we need EMTs, you know, it's not all about blood and guts, you know, it's mechanics, paperwork, attorneys, you know, we come from all walks of life. And again, it does take a village to run an ambulance corps. So we take talent from all walks of life.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
We
It's great to have the father and son.
Both
yeah.
in EMS.
Yeah, but he's a paramedic. I was only an EMT. Okay.
Could you start off just by...
I know the routine. Oh. Stuart. Stuart Wiswer, Stuart Wiswer. I've lived in Hurleyville my whole life. My father was actually born here in Hurleyville. Back in 69, they started looking to organize an ambulance here in Hurleyville. And I wasn't quite 18, so I really couldn't officially be a member. But I was in the very beginning. And I started out as an advanced EMT. And back in 76, after college, I became an EMT. So some of that stuff kind of rubbed off on my son. I retired as a sergeant in Fallsburg Police, but my son is he went on to become a firefighter, and this is my son Aaron, Aaron Wiswer, and he can kind of bring you up more current than I, because he's a firefighter paramedic.
So you're active right now, still serving for the community?
Yes, I'm a firefighter over in Lock Sheldrake, and I actually work as a firefighter paramedic at the VA hospital in Castle Point over in Wappingers in Dutchess County.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
That's great. Obviously, you got into this because of your father, because of the family connection, right?
Yeah. So fourth generation volunteer firefighter, so it kind of runs in the blood a little bit. And at some point, my kids consider doing it because they see me doing it and they saw their grandfather doing it, so hopefully it'll continue.
Something that we've been hearing a lot today is the need for volunteers for both ambulance corps and for firefighters in the area. Are you seeing that need as well?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's that needs everywhere. EMS is, you're either into it or you're not into it, and it takes a lot of time, especially with people that don't work the business. So it's very difficult to want to volunteer. When you have a 9-to-5 job, a fire call can take half hour, 45 minutes, unless it's a big fire. For an ambulance call, for EMS, it could be anywhere from an hour and a half more. You got to get to the call, get to the patient, get the patient to the hospital, and then get back in service
and the paperwork
and finishing the paperwork at the end. So it a fire call can take up to 45 minutes or so, and an EMS call starts at an hour and a half and just works its way up from there. So,
you know, that's the first time I've heard somebody kind of delineate like we've been articulating the need for both the fire and EMS. It's the first time I've heard somebody actually explain like, well, here's why this is a little bit more of a commitment from folks.
It is, and then it's 100-something hours to be a firefighter. It's 180 hours or more, I think, now to be an EMT.
Training-wise,
so it's even more after that. And then advanced EMTs can go another 3-4 months, and then paramedic can be up to a year, year and a half, depending upon what program you're doing and what college you're doing it through in New York State.
It's EMS week. Like, is there anything that you want folks to know that they might not realize about EMS work?
I can tell you that the idea is that everybody should be trained in CPR. And if you have an opportunity to get a little extra training on how a simple defibrillator works, that you should get that. So God forbid that event happens and you're there, you have a lot of that knowledge so that you can at least start something, which is the key to all of it.
Right, and you're saying this for everybody, not for people that are prospective EMS volunteers.
No, I'm talking about everybody. John Q. Public needs to have this.
CPR training is just as important as Narcan training. Nowadays, you know, early defibrillation is the key for successful resuscitation. So it's important that everybody gets at least CPR, and then you can always throw first aid in there like the Boy Scouts teach, and then you can progress to there if you're looking to interested in volunteering in the future. Absolutely.
But at least you'll have those basics.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I want to thank you both for talking to me today, Wiswer and Wiswer.
Thank you.
And thank you very much.
And that's going to do it from the Special EMS History Exhibit at Sullivan County Museum. The exhibit is up through this Saturday over at the Sullivan County Museum. It's at scnyhistory.com. That's scnyhistory.com. Thank you so much to everybody who talked to us. We just heard paramedic and fourth generation volunteer firefighter currently serving with Lock Sheldrake Fire Department, Aaron Wiswer. And we also heard from his father, retired Fallsburg Police Sergeant Stuart Wiswer. Before that was Alex Rowe, current EMS coordinator for Sullivan County, also oversees the 911 call center. Donna Denman, member of the Grahamsville First Aid Squad. And then back at the beginning, we heard from exhibit curator Myron Gattell. That's going to do it for the local edition tonight. Thank you so much for listening, and don't go anywhere. Kusar Grace and the Music Emporium is coming up next.